content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. So let's start with a little more information about Helen Mirren that we started last time. This episode says, "The Dame's Failure as a Tailor." The bar is beginning to fill with couples coming in for a drink before dinner. They glance at Mirren, but give her plenty of space. We turn down a second drink. She's driving, and I at least am too old for that kind of business anymore. It's Saturday, and the next day I'll go watch her photo shoot for the magazine. She'll be in costume, she tells me, which brings to mind her career in fashion. At age 69, she was named an ambassador for L'Oréal of Paris, becoming one of a select set of fashion icons who act as spokeswomen for the brand. 8 years later, does she still find it invigorating? Does it ever become tiresome? Dame Helen purses her lips, perhaps thinking over the tiresome thing, and then smiles. It's energizing. I've always loved clothes. I love dressing up. I've always loved costumes, too. One of my favorite places to go is a costume house. I love the artist's animal nature of clothes. Then she admits to something she doesn't do well, yet something she has always done. I make clothes myself, extremely badly, and then I hardly ever wear them because they're so awful, but I like the process of making them. What sort of pieces? I'm always trying to make the perfect sarong, for example, she says, and suddenly she's laughing. Yes, it's so difficult, she says, still laughing, and I suspect she's laughing at my confusion. I really never considered a sarong. She must be joking with me. I'm thinking a sarong is just a large bolt of cloth, like a blanket or a bedsheet you wrap around yourself. But she's serious, even through the laughter. The perfect sarong hangs well. You just hook it on and it's just perfect. She looks at my shirt. Then I went through a phase of making men's shirts. I'm wearing my best shirt, a patterned Ben Sherman button-down number, so I don't cringe much. Dame Helen holds out her hand as if she were about to touch my shirt pocket, then turns it palm up in a gesture of explanation. I really appreciate what it takes to put a placket on a shirt and to put those buttonholes in. It's really difficult to put that pocket in exactly the right place, then stitch it. And that was all done by hand. Then she says it again. The artist's animal nature of that I find really wonderful. I have no idea what she means, but before I can ask, she says, all my boyfriends had to have a shirt made by me. It's a list that includes Peter O'Toole and her husband, director Taylor Hackford. You're saying there's a group of men who have shirts made by Helen Mirren? Yes. Does Liam Neeson have a shirt? I ask. I did make one for him, oddly enough, she says. After a moment, she adds, we loved each other. We were not meant to be together in that way, but we loved each other very, very much. I love him deeply to this day. He's such an amazing guy. So, in a way, you already have your own line of shirts. She laughs at the thought. Yes, very bad shirts. And the last section in this, the dame changes with the times. Sometimes. We've been sitting together for almost an hour, and I realize that she has not once looked at her phone. I appreciate that, but I'm recording the interview on mine. I apologize, then touch the screen to see that the voice recording app is still working. I hate that when the screen goes black, I say. I'm always afraid that I've lost something. Dame Helen sighs. I'm awfully glad for the technology, she says. But it seems like every week there is some new technology thing that I've got to learn. Does she think she has changed with age? Well, the thoughts that you had when you were 16, you have exactly the same thoughts when you're 76, which is very annoying. After a pause, she runs on. And every year I make the same New Year's resolutions. I will not procrastinate. And every year I procrastinate. I will be more communicative. And every year I fail to be communicative. Certain character failings stay with you forever, it seems to me. But in another way, we change totally. I mean, I am a completely different person compared to the person I was at 22 or 23. Even your skin changes. Your body changes. How you think changes. She looks at me like I'm on her team. I mean, you and I have got to learn how to work with these damn phones, you know? Dame over. It's getting to be evening, the end of a working week for Dame Helen. Yet she doesn't appear tired or lonely or homesick. She begins to speak to the customers who have been respectfully ignoring us until that point. She seems occupied by the place that she's in, this cozy bar, Butte, Montana, America. I think that experience of going across America by train made me understand how powerful geography is upon American consciousness. When I first came to this country, I couldn't see what held it together apart from the shopping malls. Eventually, she knocks around the ice in her glass with a stick of celery, and I know we are done. We stand up, shake hands, and that's when I ask her, "Have you ever been called a dame?" Not the dame, just a dame. She's smiling when she declares, "Oh, yes, my husband thinks I'm a dame. He absolutely thinks I'm an American type of dame." How would he characterize that part of you? She looks around at the place one more time. Probably something exactly like this. Me drinking a Bloody Mary at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in a speakeasy. He's got a point, I think, and with that the dame is gone. Back through the secret door, out into the world where her work awaits. The writer for this article was Tom Chiarella, a longtime writer for Esquire and a National Magazine Award winner. And that article was from AARP, the magazine, as is this next item. From the Money Saver section, Financial Habits It's Time to Break. We read that last time. Now, let's look at rental help resources. Finding short-term tenants via companies like Airbnb and Vrbo isn't the only internet-enabled option for earning rental income. Here are some other items you can hire out for profit, thanks to online services that list your property, collect customer payments, and sometimes provide insurance. Keep in mind that not all of these sites may have much activity in your area, and the share of a transaction that flows to you will vary depending on the site. The middleman's cut can be anywhere from 5% to 40%. 1. An RV or camper. Your middleman would be RVShare.com or OutdoorSY.com or RVNGO.com. Up for rent, an Airstream trailer, sleeping four, near Utah's Canyonlands Desert, $140 a night. Number 2, storage space. Middlemen, StoreAtMyHouse.com or Neighbor.com. Up for rent, 446 square foot building in Colorado Springs, $70 a month. Outdoor sports gear. The middleman is SpinLister.com or FatLlama.com. So that's FatLlama.com. Up for rent would be a snowboard near Groton, Connecticut at $70 a week. How about a vehicle? Middleman is GetAround.com or FetchTruck.com or Turo.com. Up for rent is a Jeep Wrangler in the San Francisco Bay Area, $67 a day. Or tools and equipment. The middleman, FriendWithA.com or RentMyEquipment.com. Up for rent is a miter saw on rolling stand Retail value is $700. Near Seattle, it's $40 a day. Or parking space. Middlemen, Spacer.com or Neighbor.com or ParkX, that's ParkEx.com. Up for rent is a space across the street from Wrigley Field during a Friday afternoon Chicago Cubs home game, $51. Now, if you want to do it yourself, you can also list rental offerings for free on major sites such as Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist.org, and Nextdoor.com. Parking spaces and storage space are commonly on offer. Take these steps if you go this route. 1. Check out similar listings to ensure you have a competitive price. 2. Play it safe by meeting your customer in a public place. 3. Get paid up front, cash in your hand or money in your account. And the sidebar with this article is more ways to raise cash. Here's how some people do it. Declutter. Maureen Stiles, 58, of Gaithersburg, Maryland, averages $75 a month in sales on Facebook Marketplace, listing her family's old clothes and brand name finds from thrift stores. Go back to school. When her daughter's high school asked parents to consider working as substitute teachers in 2021, Emily Korf, 46, of Vienna, Virginia, responded, "Hourly pay in her area starts at $18.50. Job requirements vary by state and district." Be tech supportive. In Delray Beach, Florida, retiree Larry Davis, 72, charges $35 an hour for computer tasks such as setting up printers and installing Wi-Fi networks. Advertising in local papers targeted at older residents helps get customers, he says. Get paid to donate. Mary Hellstrom, 54, of Winterset, Iowa, makes about $450 a month donating plasma, the yellow liquid portion of blood left over after platelets and other cells are removed. It helps people, she says. Getting paid is just a bonus. To find a donation center near you, visit givingplasma.org. And finally, teach online. Former math teacher Peggy Chinoski, 54, of Troy, Michigan, tutors middle and high school students, charging $35 to $50 for half-hour online sessions. Other subjects for which there's demand for help, reading, writing, and foreign languages. Volunteer at a local school to test the waters. Now, from AARP The Bulletin, under Your Health, let's look at 7 surprising causes of back pain. A few lifestyle adjustments could help prevent chronic lumbar challenges. At least 8 out of 10 of us will experience back pain at one time or another. Sometimes these aches start to resolve in just a few days, but in many cases, back pain can last weeks, months, even years, and figuring out the cause can require some serious sleuthing. Often there's a mystery to the diagnosis, said A.N. Shamey, M.D., professor and chief of spine surgery at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Seek medical attention if your back pain doesn't go away after a few days of over-the-counter pain medication or a brief period of rest, especially if it's not associated with a specific activity. While your doctor can rule out an injury or other serious cause, it might be up to you to help suss out what's triggering the pain. It could be one of these unexpected causes. 1. You aren't drinking enough milk. It's not the milk per se, but the vitamin D it comes with. Studies have found that those with the most severe back pain had the lowest levels of vitamin D. The vitamin's effect on bone health could help explain the connection. Research in the journal Menopause found that among postmenopausal women considering spine surgery, those with severe vitamin D deficiency had more severe disc degeneration and back pain. Stronger bones can help protect against back pain and other disabling issues. Consult your physician about your vitamin D levels, UCLA's Shamey says. Two, your core is weak. The muscles in your midsection make up the core, says physical therapist Karina Wu of Active Care Physical Therapy in New York City. A weak core can mean chronic back pain. To help build strength, sit or stand straight, imagining that there's a string attached to the top of your head, pulling you upward. Now, tighten your abdominal muscles, trying not to move your pelvis, ribs, or shoulders. Hold that position as long as you're comfortable. You sit and sit some more. One study showed that people who sat for 75% of the workday reported significantly more back and neck pain than those who sat less, 25 to 75% of the time. But even if you're not chained to a desk chair all day, sitting in the same position for too long can let pain creep in. To keep stiffness at bay, observe the 30-minute rule. Don't let yourself idle in the same position for more than half an hour. You can even set an alert on your phone to remind you to get up and move around or walk or stretch a bit. You have a new grandchild. They're delicious, delightful, and heavier than they look. If it's been a while since you lowered an infant into a crib or picked a toddler in mid-tantrum off the floor, you might be feeling it in your lower back. When lifting a baby, widen your base of support by spreading your feet a little apart and bringing your center closer to the ground. Be sure you hold small children close to you when you are moving them from the floor to the crib or from the ground to a car seat, says physical therapist Matthew Menard, owner of Human Movement Optimization in Charlotte, North Carolina. Imagine there's a circle around your feet and stay within that zone, he says. Or your shoes weren't made for walking. Improper shoes can create instability and trigger back pain. The natural curve of the spine can be affected because you're either leaning forward or backward to stabilize the foot, says Kiji Manchanda, MD, an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at the University of Texas as Southwestern Medical Center. In general, supportive walking or running shoes should be on your feet when you're logging most of your daily steps. Leave flip-flops, flimsy sandals, or high heels for special occasions. Your bedroom isn't dark enough. Even during sleep, your body can recognize when there's too much light in your bedroom. Your heart rate increases and your quality of sleep suffers. And there's a clear association between poor sleep and back pain. Sleep helps our muscles to relax and get rid of lactic acid buildup, Shami says. Plus, deep sleep deprivation heightens your sensitivity to pain. Rest also keeps discs in good condition. The jelly-like core of a normal, healthy disc is 80% water, Shami says. When you lie down to rest, your discs can refill for the day ahead. This gets more important as we get older, and our discs become drier. To fight the light, get blackout shades and ban digital devices from the bedroom. And finally, your legs don't go toe to toe. About one in three of us have legs that aren't exactly the same length, says Ryan Inke, MD, physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist in Rockford, Illinois. Oftentimes, it's something you're born with, although injuries or arthritis can also cause one leg to become shorter. A difference in leg length alters the normal biomechanics of walking or standing. That puts unequal stress or strain on one side of the body versus the other. The solution may be as simple as adding a lift into the shoe of the shorter side, but physical therapy can also help, he notes. Now, also from AARP, the bulletin, caregiving concerns. Who will care for us? For the LGBTQ community, aging solo can be a frightening prospect. Like me, my friend Vince is a single gay man in his 60s. Prior to his father's recent death, I witnessed how Vince played crucial roles, caregiver, financial planner, good son. My siblings and I played the same roles with my folks before they died. Vince and I would talk about who would provide care when our time came. Neither of us has kids or close family nearby. As much as I don't like to be a stereotype, my life reflects the data. LGBTQ people are twice as likely to be single and live alone as our straight counterparts, and four times as likely to be childless. I never expected life to be this way, but who does? In my late 40s, I met the man I'd fall in love with, then legally marry. We often talked about how we would be the long-term care solution for each other, and then we divorced. But the sad truth is that hands-on care from a spouse is only available to the first one to get sick. The survivor is as alone as a single person. That's where kids typically come in. I joke with my nieces, who are in their 20s, that my birthday presents to them as a gunkle, gay uncle, have been down payments on my future care. But I would never force that onto them. At least, I hope not. Since my divorce at age 60, I've been lucky. I've only had three medical moments that required having a companion present. Fortunately, I found willing friends to help me for these one-day needs. Still, I felt uncomfortable asking for assistance. What if I got really sick, like for a long time? I saw the difficulties my parents faced when new health aides came into their home. Sometimes Mom and Dad weren't respected. Sometimes the aides didn't even show up. We kids were always there to fix it. So I worry about managing my own care. And if I need in-home help, will I be comfortable acknowledging my sexual identity to a stranger who might have issues? A few years ago, I watched the documentary Jen Silent, which depicts widespread discrimination against LGBTQ people in long-term care facilities. According to its maker, Stu Maddox, LGBTQ older people are frequently so afraid of discrimination or bullying that many go back into the closet. Still, I know from experience how well-practiced the LGBT community is in creating self-made families. We did that during the darkest days of the HIV epidemic. And as we've gotten older, I've seen it continue. When an ex-partner was diagnosed with cancer a couple of years ago, he and his husband created a Caring Bridge account to share information with selected friends, making it almost turnkey for them to get support. Similarly, the wife of a transgender friend turned to the online platform Meal Train after her spouse became ill. A calendar was published and dinner slots were filled in by friends, offering dishes from mac and cheese to coq au vin. Both situations are powerful examples of creating small support groups. As Maddox told me, it's incumbent upon each of us to be building that network early and often. I have been. Perhaps that's my real down payment for the future. Where I live in North Carolina, I found a continuing care community and a co-housing project that embrace LGBTQ people. I have friends in both. And when I went on tours, I felt welcomed. I put down a deposit on one, giving me a place to call home in the years to come. With any luck, I'll find another husband along the way. Just in case, I've requested an apartment large enough for two. This article was by Steve Petro. He's been a columnist for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and USA Today, and is the author of seven books. He has served as president of NLGJA, the Association of LGBTQ Journalists. From AARP, the magazine, more in the article, The Moment That Changed My Life. NFL coach Jimmy Johnson, 79, on the loss that made him better at his job. I coached the worst game of my career in the January 1987 Fiesta Bowl in Arizona. I cost my most talented University of Miami team a national title. Me alone. That 14-10 loss to Penn State changed me like no other game in my career. I stood before the team in the locker room afterward, telling our players to be proud of their season, to keep their heads up, even as my head couldn't stay up. I could barely talk. My eyes watered. It wasn't sorrow building inside me. It was pain. Pure, gut-wrenching pain. I collapsed on the floor of the coach's locker room a few minutes later, crying in agony. I never lived in the middle of the road. It was agony or ecstasy after games. It wasn't the cramped locker room my team received in Arizona or the slanted media coverage. We dominated Penn State just as I had expected, but all that mattered was our five interceptions. The fifth interception came on a pass from the Penn State five-yard line with 18 seconds left. Our quarterback, Vinny Testaverde, wasn't ready to play that game. That was my fault, and I did an even worse job managing our offense. Had we run more, leaned on their defense harder, changed quarterbacks, had I pushed any of a handful of strategic buttons, the more talented team would have won. When we returned to Miami, our president, Tad Foote, reneged on a promise to extend my contract. Then he called a news conference and demanded I apologize. For what? I'm still not sure, and I didn't apologize. No, I was hardened. Never again did I take any game, any lead, any advantage for granted. That loss made me a better coach in many regards. This was adapted from Swagger, Super Bowls, Brass Balls, and Footballs by Jimmy Johnson and Dave Hyde. Copyrighted 2022 by James W. Johnson. Excerpted with permission by the publishers. Now to AARP, the bulletin, for a few more money-saving tips. We are on energy costs. Get all rebates and tax credits. States and some municipalities offer incentives for everything from installing solar panels to buying an electric car or upgrading your home appliances. Check your eligibility at DSIREUSA.org. And get help paying for improvements. The Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program may provide funding to help you pay for weatherization and energy-related home repairs. Find out if you qualify by visiting your state's LIHEAP website, or you can call 866-674-6327 toll-free. Well, folks, we have reached the end of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.